Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Sheepdogs, welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly, vigorous, relentless, and typically ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are, shut that phone down there. Give me a second here. Sorry about that. We are broadcasting live from the Very Well Armed Studio in Niburla, Wisconsin. It is my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. And with a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio, and proud and confident to say that I'm probably the smartest guy in the room as well. Of course, I'm looking around this room and I'm the only guy in the room, but besides the point, encourage you to be a part of the show with your calls, ideas, questions, comments, criticism, participation. I'll almost give you the old phone number, 563-999-3787. 563-999-3787 is the number here. Got a couple folks in the chat tonight. We've got someone with Zed Biden's avatar and the name "You Can't Steal My Freedom" one. So good to have you in, or whoever that is. And then we've got Lon from Wausau in the chat tonight as well. So great to have you both here. Start the show with the usual warning: no sacred cows here. And then He says, I too believe narcissism is real. So first 50 minutes of show is typically open line. People call in anything they'd like to discuss. No one usually takes me up on that. I think part of the reason is because most of the people listen to the podcast versus live. But if anybody does want to call in, then we've got a few minutes here. We'll take anything you want to talk about, news from the last week, your undying love and affection for Joe Biden, whether Kamala Harris is the best-looking vice president ever. So, you know, I don't think Kamala Harris is actually that bad-looking, but the problem is that communism just gives people a really – have you ever noticed that, like, maybe it's just me, but if I see a chick – okay, I'll use an example. I was at my gym, and there's a girl who had a – she was, you know, I give her on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe a 5, 6. But then she had a – what did she have? She had an AOC shirt on. She had a shirt with AOC, one of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's quotes on it. And so I'm like, okay, this chick's a liberal. And then just instantly for me, like, she kind of got to about a 3 or a 4. Whereas, like, if she'd have been, like, a conservative, you know, she might have been, like, a 7, you know. So, like, Kamala Harris – I don't think she's terrible looking, but then that communist streak takes her down like 3 or 4. Well, communist is fair for her. I was going to say socialist. No, she's fair enough to say a communist. But yeah, I mean, just another week goes by. We see Joe Biden, his address to the nation. I think that was Thursday night. It was either Wednesday or Thursday. And man, I mean, the guy, least exposed president ever for good reason, because I mean, this guy can barely keep it together. I mean, he's not going to make Memorial Day. And I don't say that in a mocking way for his health, but I say that in a way that, I mean, people, Trump, conservative media, tried to point this out for months during the campaign. But so this is no surprise to a lot of people. I call it the Obama-Harris administration. Do I call it the Obama-Harris administration or the Harris-Obama administration? I forget what I have to go look at my old notes. I think I called it the Obama-Harris administration, but that's who I believe is calling the shots here. I mean, and here's why I think that, because some people say, no, Kamala Harris is calling the shots. Here on the chat says, how about a chick that talks about sports? Definitely Green Party. I'm not into sports. So a chick that talks about sports wouldn't do anything for me. It might even be a little bit of a turnoff. But if a chick talks about being a conservative, huge turn on. Like, who's another one? Okay, I'll give you one. Nobody ever agrees with me on this one. I think that, and this has kind of changed because I think she's wavered. I got to think of her name. She was the national security advisor under George W. Bush. Black woman. What the hell is her name? Condoleezza Rice. Yeah. Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice. She's not that attractive, but she's not ugly. But then she's got, what I thought she was and now since George W. Bush in my book has gone, I mean, I used to think George W. Bush was a good president. But then I was a super huge Bush fan during his first term. After the Patriot Act passed, I gave up on the Republican Party and drank the Libertarian Kool-Aid for a while. So I didn't vote for Bush in 2004. But now we've seen that just the whole Bush family, I mean, you know, they're swamp creatures. And so Condoleezza Rice, probably about the same, you know, here's the reason I was getting stuck up, because Condoleezza Rice, then you got Susan Rice. Susan Rice was Obama's, something. I forgot Susan Rice was a, so I don't think they're related, but Condoleezza Rice, I used to think, cause she was super, I mean, well, she's still smart, but I mean, not that smart if you want to be part of the swamp in DC. But she was so smart, and being a conservative, or at the time I thought conservative. Again, I don't know if she's as much felt like who's some other ones that felt the bandwagon. Colin Powell used to think highly of him, but I mean he's just I mean that guy is a Democrat light. But Condoleezza Rice, again, not an attractive woman, but the fact that she was super smart and a conservative, that made her pretty attractive to me. I mean, it's funny just how someone's, for me, someone's intellect makes them look more attractive, even though obviously their physical appearance doesn't change. But just knowing that, I just have such a negative opinion. I truly think that progressive, liberal people that embrace that are immoral. And I back that up. I mean, I've talked about that on the show before, how the reasons I think it's immoral. But on the other hand, you see someone who, especially because maybe women aren't necessarily usually as politically engaged, perhaps, as guys, maybe that's a little bit chauvinist to say. Then again, I think of some of my friends, and maybe it's a good 50-50 split. I mean, I think I have just as many female friends that are pretty into politics as guy friends. But although maybe that's just the circles I run. And I think it'd be fair to say that, generally speaking, guys are probably a little bit more politically engaged than women. But yeah, so I Kamala Harris, if she wasn't, if she was a hardcore conservative, I'd think, yeah, she's pretty good looking. but the fact that she's just a rank, and she's a bitch too. You know, the first time I thought, man, what a first class bitch, was when she was in the debate with Mike Pence. And so she's having a debate with Mike Pence. See, this is the thing. This is a problem I have with women with liberal women, is they want to have their cake and eat it too. So you can't, and this is, they're saying this before, that, you know, Mike Pence has to be very polite and courteous to Kamala Harris. Otherwise it'll come off as that he's insensitive, a chauvinist, you know, mansplaining things. You just had to be very careful. But then Kamala Harris, she, and it's a debate and there's going to be some back and forth, some interruption. But when Mike Pence would interject at all, Kamala Harris would look over at him and go, "I'm talking, excuse me, I'm talking," or something like, "Excuse me, can I finish?" And he's kind of nods and goes, "Go right ahead." And she goes, "Okay, thanks." Okay. And just the way she, says, "You can have an opinion, doesn't make it fact," was great from Pence. I don't know what you mean there. Someone in the chat says, "You can have an opinion, doesn't make a fact," was great from Pence. Oh, he owned her. Oh, no. Yeah, no, I don't think she owned him in the debate. I think that she just came off as a first class bitch in the debate. Because when he would make a comment, or and then she would, and then he went to like interject, and not in like an extremely rude way, but just, you know, just kind of objected to some of her comments or something in a brief statement. She looks at him, just gives him that bitch glare, and says, "Can I finish?" And then he kind of nods his head and goes, "Go right ahead." And she says, "Okay." And it was just, he had already acknowledged and said, you know, but it, anyway, to me, it just came off as a first class bitch move. And so then I've seen some of the documentaries on Kamala Harris and just how woefully unqualified she is, which is typical for these liberals. These guys have no skill set, career politicians, career government officials. Kamala Harris, I think, slept her way to where she's at. But who was that guy out in California? Was it? I don't know if it was Charlie Rangel. I might be confused with another guy that she hooked up with to advance her career as whatever DA. And then so Kamala Harris, just first class bitch. But if she wasn't a first class bitch and she was a conservative, and I think she's rather attractive. And she would be more so if she was a conservative. But anyway, now I forget where I was going with that. I was talking about, the Harris-Obama administration. I call it the I think I've been calling it the Obama-Harris administration because Joe Biden can't, you know, he doesn't even know how to tie his shoes anymore. And then, so who's calling the shots? And the reason I don't think it's Kamala Harris is because it took Joe Biden a long time to pick his running mate. And everybody's like, you know, why hasn't he picked a running mate yet? Why hasn't he picked a running mate? And I think that was because Joe Biden, in fact, I even remember someone saying that I think South Carolina was like the first state that Joe Biden won in the primaries, the Democrat primary for president this past year in 2020. Or was that? No, it would have been 2019. I got to think. No, the Democrat primary was still in. Yeah, the Democrat primary was 2020. It was still 2020 when the Democrat primary was going on. And Kamala Harris, what? She was getting like 3% of the vote in the Democrat primary. She had no support among the Democrat voter base. And then it took Biden forever to pick a running mate. And it doesn't make sense. You usually pick a running mate from traditionally maybe a state that you want to, like a swing state that you want to do well in. So that would, for Joe Biden, that would have been picking a running mate from Wisconsin, picking a running mate from Michigan, picking a running mate from Pennsylvania, just one of those places where you think it'll give you a bump in that, in one of those swing states. And then, but it wasn't even until in the primary, it wasn't even until I think South Carolina, when some black politician came out and endorsed Joe Biden, that was his first victory. I mean, I don't even trust the Democrats with their own primaries. I think those are probably rigged too. There's little doubt in my mind, those are probably rigged. But so someone was calling the shots and they paved the way for Biden to win, but then Biden had to do what they wanted. And I think that's the reason that Kamala Harris was picked as his running mate, because she doesn't fit the mold for what you would typically do. Doesn't fit the mold for how you would typically pick a running mate, unless you wanted that radical, unless you didn't think you needed a bump in the swing states because you knew you were going to use vote fraud. But that's what makes me think that it was Obama, that Obama's been calling all the shots, because someone twisted Joe Biden's arm into picking Kamala Harris as his running mate. I don't think in any stretch Joe Biden would have picked her of his own devices. So who would have been behind that? I mean, you got to think it was Obama was behind that. He loves the radicals. They wanted a radical. Biden was pandering for the black community and what better a woman. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Definitely if you want to try to attract the black vote, which Biden needed to do because Trump was doing really well with the black vote. Yep, definitely. That's a good point. She wasn't from a swing state, but she was supposedly black. I mean, she's what is she? Indian and Jamaican or something? I forget. But anyway, but yeah, a woman as well, just to play that identity politics angle. But so that's why I call it the Obama Harris. I think Obama's calling the shots. I think Obama. As soon as they can, I think they need to get some time in, because for Joe to, you know, it would be a little too obvious for Joe to have to step aside 2 months into his presidency. But I mean, there was video of him the other day. He couldn't even get a pen in his inside breast pocket of his coat. And then he has to look inside his coat and look, and he finds with one hand, it reminded me of like a, this is maybe too bad. It reminded me of like a 13-year-old trying to get laid for the first time. First, Joe Biden opens his coat and he's got can't get the pen in the pocket of his coat. So then he opens, looks, sticks his finger in the hole that he needs to put the pen in to make sure that he's found the hole, and then goes to try to stick the pen in. Still can't get the pen inside breast pocket of his jacket. So he puts it in his other hand. He goes and sticks it in his pants pocket. I mean, the guy's just losing it. And so I think he's way more deteriorated than anybody thought he was. And he's not going to last long. I don't think he lasts until Memorial Day. But and I think that's also why Democrats are trying to ram everything through so fast, because I think Democrats know they're going to get slaughtered. There's two problems that the Democrats have. First, I think we're starting to see enough action from Republicans to make the kind of vote fraud that they use to steal the election impossible. Not impossible, but I think there's going to be enough to mitigate some of the vote fraud next time around. And so that will make it difficult for them to cheat on the national races. But the House of Representatives races, the problem here is these things are still generally, those are not statewide races. They're run from, in Wisconsin, we call them outstate, you know, non-Milwaukee, non-Madison city clerks, county clerks, those kinds of offices, where I don't think the Democrats have the vote fraud machine. Of course, now for what we've seen out of Green Bay this past week, it makes you wonder what kind of vote fraud is in these non, you know, it's definitely beyond just Milwaukee and Madison where there's this vote fraud that we've got to address. But these House of Representatives races, these are not tabulated at Central Count in Milwaukee. The opportunity to cheat is much, much, much different. And so for that reason, and that's the same with the other state, these are not statewide races. The whole state doesn't vote on the first congressional district in Wisconsin, you know, Brian Stiles' race. The whole state does not vote on Scott Fitzgerald. I think he's the 13th Senate district. I'm not 100% sure if I'm right on that. But so these elections are run out of those counties, and they're not Milwaukee and Dane County. So the opportunity for vote fraud is less. There's a much higher likelihood that many of those are still somewhat honest elections. That doesn't mean Democrats aren't trying to cheat, because there's so many mechanisms of vote fraud that the Democrat has. I mean, it's the mail-in ballots. It's the nursing home voting for dead people. It's voting for, you know, there's 250,000 names on the voter roll list that were supposed to be purged that weren't purged. And so there's people that can vote those, and those could certainly exist in counties outside of Dane County and outside of Milwaukee County. But by and large, I think those House races are less influenced by vote fraud. And for that reason, I think the Democrats know that they're going to lose the House big time in 2022. So they've got 2 years to ram everything through that they can. And so, I mean, the filibuster is going to be gone. I mean, it will. There's just no doubt in my mind the filibuster is going to be gone. And so that's just a matter of, though I think they need Joe Manchin, the Democrat senator from West Virginia, I think, Joe Manchin's vote to do that. But Joe Manchin's probably the most powerful person in the country right now, it seems, when it comes to swing votes in the Senate. But yeah, I mean, it's so that's again why I call it the Obama-Harris administration. Joe Biden is just, I mean, least exposed president ever. The guy can't even tie his own shoes. I mean, it's getting laughable, and the media can't even cover for him anymore. It's just becoming so difficult. So, you know, we'll continue to watch this shit show unfold. But here's what I had this week. I was going to talk about Green Bay and the vote fraud up in Green Bay. And so there's so many different ways that vote fraud occurs. I mean, I'm of the belief that with evidence that we've seen, I'm of the belief that in Milwaukee County, they literally had someone filling out, or they had somewhere they had stored ballots marked for Joe Biden that they could just start running through a machine. And that's once they start seeing the numbers they need, they go grab those ballots. And that piece, I don't really couldn't say I have any proof of, other than it happened the same way with Scott Walker. In Scott Walker's race, there wasn't during a quote global pandemic, but same thing, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, election night, big influx of votes that were supposedly absentee ballot votes. So that again tells me that was kind of a dress rehearsal, a dry run for how they were going to steal elections. And because I believe Scott Walker actually won his election. Remember at the time there was people that said he should ask for an investigation into what happened in Milwaukee County, but he didn't because Walker just isn't a fighter. He was a one trick pony with Act 10. But if I was going to start an investigation, those irregularities give me places to go look there. And I believe we'd find fraud in that regard. I believe there was just ballots, manufactured ballots that were just shipped in and run through the machines. But also there's the, well, I listed them a couple minutes ago, voting from fake voter registrations, all those things, just vote fraud. But, excuse me. So in addition to all of the vote fraud mechanisms that we've kind of seen out there, that we've seen examples of, now we're seeing up in Green Bay, and this was a story that Wisconsin Spotlight, and I'm not sure exactly who Wisconsin Spotlight is, but Wisconsin Spotlight is, you know, it's a website, and they've obviously got investigative reporters, and they investigated through open records requests, through getting some emails and other documents they obtained. This entity, Wisconsin Spotlight, shows how grant money from private left-leaning groups funded largely by Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, as I refer to him, resulted in Democrat activists infiltrating the November presidential election in Wisconsin's five largest cities. So that would be Green Bay being one of those. So Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, and then what's the next largest cities? Is it Racine, Kenosha, or would it be, I don't know if in the Fox Valley, any of those cities larger, but essentially Wisconsin's five largest cities, these privately funded groups funded by fascist book CEO Mark Zuckerberg. So just a real quick synopsis, emails that Wisconsin Spotlight's investigation found, a former Democrat operative, Michael Spitzer Rubenstein, served as a de facto election administrator and had access to Green Bay's absentee ballots days before the election. And this is why, if you've seen the error rate for absentee ballots used to be, and I'm going to get the percentage wrong, but it used to be a, I don't know if it was 3% or 1%. I'm going to forget the exact statistic, but there was a significant error rate for absentee ballots. And then this election, surprisingly, even though there was way, 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 way more absentee ballots, the error rate dropped to like 0.0 something. I mean, it was just this infinitesimally small error rate. Well, what happened was the Democrats saw that the traditional error rate for absentee ballots, when someone sends it, they didn't fill it out right, they, you know, didn't, all kinds of things, that then you need to cure the ballot. Well, to cure an absentee ballot, you have to send it back to the person that voted absentee and have them cure it. The clerks aren't supposed to cure them. And this was, again, part of where there was vote fraud in Wisconsin. Even the Wisconsin Elections Commission came around and allowed the clerks to cure ballots for the voter. So clerks are sitting there divining the intent of the voter by looking at their ballots, whether it was maybe the it wasn't signed, or maybe it wasn't, I mean, any number of things that would make a ballot spoiled. The clerks were fixing those in these liberal cities, Madison, Milwaukee, and others, and now obviously Green Bay. Well, in Green Bay, then you've got all these, I don't know if it would be millions in Green Bay, but tens of thousands of absentee ballots that came in, hundreds of thousands maybe of absentee ballots that came in ahead of the election. And this Democrat operative who was funded by grants from fascist book CEO Mark Zuckerberg, has access to these ballots at Central Count in Green Bay. So Rubenstein and his team, they could go in, and these were all stored in like a ballroom, the KI Center ballroom. So when the Brown County clerk, Sandy Juneau, started objecting to some of the stuff going on here, but there was a contract with the Spitzer Rubenstein's group, because the Green Bay clerk, Green Bay's clerk grew increasingly frustrated with the takeover of her department by the Democrat mayor of Green Bay and outside groups. A Brown County clerk, Sandy Juneau, said the contract with this Spitzer Rubenstein's group would have four of the five keys to the KI Center ballroom where this ballots were stored for the central count. The Democrat operatives group had those keys. The Brown County clerk said the city of Green Bay went rogue on the election. And election law experts have said the city illegally gave left-leaning groups authority over the election, over those, through those absentee ballots. So we're going to find out more about this. And you might have to watch conservative or listen to conservative talk radio and conservative news outlets to hear about it. I don't know if and when it ends up hitting the mainstream phony news, because there comes a point where they have to report certain things to maintain even a modicum, even a facade of journalistic integrity. And journalistic is in air quotes there. But that's Green Bay's vote fraud machine. And that's just another way that we didn't even know, but that was another way that these that vote fraud was carried out this past fall. And again, for Donald Trump lost the state by 20,000 votes. I mean, it took a massive vote fraud effort. It wasn't just one thing that did it. I mean, the Democrats had to get their vote fraud machine on every angle and every morsel of fraud to eke out. Because who knows? I wonder how many ballots were cured up in Green Bay. It could have easily been 20,000 ballots that were cured just in Green Bay. So that's not even looking at what they did in Milwaukee with this vote dump at 2 a.m. On election night, or more the morning after the election, early morning hours after the election. But so, we'll see if, again, I'm not holding my breath that hits the mainstream news, but it's just interesting to see how these vote fraud mechanisms worked. And there was so many of them. Dan O'Donnell on WISN, he did stories on how nursing homes, they had people going into nursing homes and voting for the people in nursing homes who are cognitively unaware, who are so cognitively diminished that they can't vote. And then people were going and checking and seeing that their elderly relative who's in a nursing home and isn't, you know, they have power of attorney over them. This person isn't allowed to sign checks or anything. And all of a sudden they voted. They should have, this power of attorney, their family member should have been present for that, and they weren't. And then, there's so many different places where the vote fraud came from. But here's the thing. When it comes to this, there's a contingent of gun owners in Wisconsin, I'm not knocking this. I don't agree with it. I'm not a big supporter of the tactic. But there's a contingent of gun owners in Wisconsin that just loves to rally. And I'm going to, you know, Tom Leaguer, he's now the new executive director for Wisconsin Gun Owners. But before that, he was just I don't know what, but he was even using Wisconsin Carry's Facebook group to try to promote these rallies that he would have in Madison. He was just all into the rallies. We need to rally. And look, these rallies in Madison that, you know, they draw a few dozen people or 100 people, gun owners that are, you know, up there open carrying. And again, I'm a big open carry supporter myself. But these, in my opinion, based on observation experience, gun rallies, gun protests, whatever, any kind of rally, they don't move the needle. I mean, look in Madison, we had 100,000 angry union schleps up there protesting in 2011. I was going to say 2010, but I guess it was actually 2011. And that didn't change anything. I mean, so and here in Wisconsin, ever since then, it seems like any other kind of protest is really paltry in comparison to the union thug protests back in the Act 10 days. But so I don't think legislatively, I don't think protests, I don't think, you know, when you get a few dozen gun owners up there in Madison, I don't think that legislatively moves the needle at all. I don't think it demonstrates this broad-based support. I think if anything, it demonstrates that gun owners are kind of lazy. I mean, we know there's millions of gun owners in the state of Wisconsin, but yet only, you know, typically, we'll just give the benefit, maybe you'll get a couple hundred. On a really, really good day, you get a couple hundred for a gun rally in Madison. But so I just don't think that sends this big indicator, this big windsock showing just the strong winds of support for gun rights in the state of Wisconsin. But there's some people who just love to do it. They just love to protest. I've always said that the purpose of a protest, because Wisconsin Carry's done a couple of them, and at least one. But traditionally, what a protest will do is a protest will attract the news historically. Now that might be changing, but You know, these guys like Tom Leaguer and others, that they get their permits in Madison. They go get a few dozen people to show up on the Capitol steps. They got their PA system that they set up. And I think there is zero legislative and zero PR value in that kind of rally. A few dozen gun owners, even a few hundred gun owners, doesn't move any needle or demonstrate any broad support for gun rights, even in when it makes the news. I've often said that the value of rallies and protests is very limited, in my opinion, but it's to draw media attention to something that's not getting media attention, because historically, TV crews would show up for any protest. If I was to call Channel 4, Channel 6, Channel 12 and tell them that Wisconsin Carry was having a protest in front of City Hall or something, they would be there 100% every single time. But to have the news media show up, like if I'm going to say that, the Democrats introduced a universal background check bill, and so the news, that's all over the news, and then I have organize a protest, a rally of gun owners to protest that, and a couple hundred gun owners show up, to me that doesn't say, wow, people are really outraged about that gun bill in Madison. In fact, it kind of says the opposite. Now, again, I know the gun owners are lazy and they just low effort gun owners and they just Legos and they just don't show, typically want to show up for things like that. And so it's not their fault. They're busy working there, but just Republicans aren't really conservatives aren't really the protest type per se. They can when they're really urged to move, but the value. So in that kind of instance, having a protest really doesn't do. You would need, now look, if you got 20,000 gun owners to show up after the Democrats introduced the universal background check bill in Wisconsin, yeah, that's significant, but you're never going to get that. I mean, on a great day, you might get a couple hundred. But here's the value of rallies. When the media isn't paying attention to something, that's what I've always said, is if the value of rallies and protests, as far as gun rights goes, is to to draw media attention to something that is not getting any media attention, because historically TV crews will show up for any protest. Now, the communist fake news fiction media phonies have altered their approach. Example, mainstream news never covers big pro-gun rallies in D.C. anymore. Or, for example, the big Trump rally that was on January 6th, they didn't cover that in D.C. until the Capitol was breached. And then they were all covering the Capitol breach portion. But they only covered the Capitol breach. They didn't cover the bigger peaceful rally that Trump had that had, some people say, hundreds of thousands of people there. But this is an example of a blockbuster story that's get this vote fraud, up in Green Bay. And here on the chat, someone says, are you sure the mail-in ballots and not the absentee ballots? Mail-in ballots in Wisconsin are absentee ballots. That's what mail-in ballots were, absentee ballots. It's mailed-in absentee ballots. Wisconsin doesn't have vote by mail. They just have absentee ballots. So when people in Wisconsin, can't speak for other states, but when people in Wisconsin voted by mail, those mail-in ballots were actually absentee ballots. That's how you vote by mail in Wisconsin. So, but this story up in Green Bay is getting no coverage in the news, but here's what I'm saying. These gun owners that love to have rallies, that always want to have rallies, here's an example of where you could go have your gun rally and actually be efficacious, to actually be impactful. Because again, if the media does what they've always done, and the media has changed tactics, but it used to be, you could get the media to show up for any protest. I mean, you get five people in Milwaukee protesting something, the media is going to show up for it. But here in Green Bay, so if you wanted, if these gun owners all over the state that just love the rallies, these couple dozen gun owners, or say, let's say a couple hundred at tops gun owners that like to go to Madison and rally, they should go to Green Bay and have a rally outside of the mayor's office in Green Bay. Organize an armed protest in Green Bay outside the mayor's office. You'll attract media attention. You'll wag the media dog, the media will cover it, and they'll be roundabout tricked into shining some light on the illegal election cheating that happened in Green Bay. Now, the media certainly isn't going to highlight that in their coverage, but unless they ignore it altogether, which they would have never done before, now they might. I mean, after all the rules seem to have changed after November's election. I mean, everything just free speech gone. I mean, the ability to criticize gone. Big tech censorship ramped up like you never seen before. So I can't say that it remains to be seen if the past media tactics when it came to protests and rallies will be those of the future media. When I talk about media, it's about local media. But this is these people that always want to go to Madison and rally. If you love to rally with your gun so much, rally for the protest with your armed protest. This is, for example, and I'm not being facetious, go to Green Bay, have a open carry rally outside of the mayor's office. You'll get the media attention there and say that when the media sticks a camera in your face while you guys are here protesting, you say, because the mayor in Green Bay was facilitating vote fraud. Now, again, how much of that the media lets you get on TV because you mentioned vote fraud and the media puts a blackout on it. But this is a way where if the media, even if the media was to cover it and they didn't even interview you on camera, because when you're on camera, you were to say, the rally organizers would say something like, we're protesting against vote fraud ushered into Green Bay by the mayor of Green Bay. If they still cover the rally, have to indicate something like, yeah, the protesters are protesting debunked claims of vote fraud in Green Bay, because that's how the media does this stuff now. They always editorialize every time President Trump was able to make it onto TV talking about vote fraud, or every time there was something that the news had to cover about Trump after the election was stolen on November 3rd, they always preface it, not letting you hear his words, but by their voiceover saying, you know, the reporter saying, you know, today President Trump had a rally in, Sheriff Clark had a rally in Tulsa. There was a Sheriff Clark organized a rally in Wauwatosa to protest vote fraud, which has been debunked by, you know, fact checkers across the country. That's how they do it. But they still tend to, but just that's just enough to get people to start to, you know, get the sheep, the non-informed. If there's an armed protest up in Green Bay outside the mayor's and people like turn on the news and see the news covering this armed protest, and even then, and even though the voice over the news would be saying, yeah, these protesters are out here protesting debunked claims of vote fraud in Green Bay, that's just enough to get people to start to be like, wait, what, the debunked vote fraud? I didn't hear about this. I didn't hear about the vote fraud in Green Bay. What was debunked? You know, just raises just enough attention. So I think there could be, again, unless the media would just completely black it out and not even cover it, I think that would be a way to wag the media dog. And so, you know, not holding my breath that any of these guys would take my advice. And again, if I really was interested, I'd send Tom Leager an email and say, hey, you love your rallies, why don't you go rally here? But I'm not interested in dialoguing with Tom Leager or any of those folks. But so next thing I was going to talk about tonight was stimulus checks and entitlements. I mean, this is just, you know, now we've got the quote, phony Pelosi, I think they're calling it the Pelosi payoff bill, that the Democrats have labeled the COVID-19 Relief Act, but it's actually the Pelosi payoff bill, bailing out all kinds of states. I mean, 9% of the money goes to COVID relief this year, and the rest of the money goes to big Democrat-run cities and states that were already facing bankruptcy. I mean, these places were all facing bankruptcy long before COVID, and COVID now has just given them an excuse to stick their hand out to the federal government and get all kinds of money to balance their budgets, because there was states all over the and big cities all over the country that were really struggling. They've got these massive lavish pensions that they got to pay for their retirees that they can't afford, and so unfunded pension obligations. And anyway, that's what this COVID-19 relief bill is it's bailing out. It's the big city bailout bill. So it just got me thinking more in the broad sense about how, you know, so part of this is these $1,400 checks that are going out to families. If you make, I think for a family, a single person got to make less than, I think, you know, $70,000 or $80,000 as a family, you got to make less than $150,000 or something like that. So obviously, you know, nothing that that I'll see a penny of. But I was thinking about it. on a philosophical level, and many of us, this term has been used before, that entitlements and free stuff, that it's breeding dependence. And it does. It's getting people dependent on the government. But I think the worst part about these stimulus checks and these entitlements, when you give someone something for nothing, look, charity, because conservatives support charity. And in some cases, charity, you're like, look, for when you're charitable, you're giving someone something for nothing. But here's the difference with charity is given with compassion and love, and then it's received with gratitude. When it comes to charity, someone out of compassion and love donates to a charity. And then someone who receives money from a charity, they receive that with gratitude, because charities aren't forced to just blanket give money away. They can be selective and review applicants and interview and have criteria about just who exactly gets the as the recipient of the money that's donated to charities. And even if it's not a formal charity, if you help out someone, like I had a friend from high school who fell out of a tree, and this was many years ago, probably 12 years ago maybe, and fell out of a tree and he was hurt. So I went down to the fundraiser and, you know, donated $1,000 for him. But that's still charity. I gave directly to him and his family at this, it was at a formal fundraiser, but it all went directly to him. But that's charity that was given with compassion and love and received with gratitude. My friend was extremely grateful to the community, all his friends that came out and to help him out, because he was, again, he had a tree trimming business and injured himself and couldn't work, and because he fell out of a tree when he was working his tree trimming business. But wealth distribution, you know, when the government's doing this, wealth distribution is taken by force. So this is the comparison I want to make here. Charity is given with compassion and love and received with gratitude. When it comes to charity, people willfully, out of compassion and love, give their money to a charity or to somebody to help them. And the person who gets it receives it with gratitude. They're grateful for it. When it's wealth redistribution or entitlements from the government, it's taken with force and received with entitlement. Not only do you fuck over people you take money from when it's by taxing the hell out of them, but with the threat of jail if they don't pay their taxes. And then you turn around and give that money to people in the form of entitlements, and they are not appreciative of it. They feel entitled. Do you hear people ever say, oh, I'm so grateful for food stamps? No, it's an entitlement. The mentality is that they're entitled to that. That's theirs. The government owes that to them. They're owed that because it comes from this nameless, faceless government. And so the fact, again, charity comes from sometimes an individual, sometimes an organization. But someone out of love and compassion gave to that charity or gave to an individual in need. And then the person in need received it with gratitude. They were grateful for it. When it comes to entitlements and tax and redistribute, it's taken with force and the threat of force, and it's received not with gratitude but with entitlement. So that's the other part of this, is that when it comes to, it's not just that we breed dependence, you know, people become dependent on the government for their income, for their survival. But that's just that fiscal dependence, but it's the intellectual corruption that it makes people literally warped to believe that they're entitled to something as a right, as a, you know, if I walk down the street and I gave someone money, they'd say thank you. But when they get that money from the government, they don't say thank you, and they don't say, oh, I'm so grateful to have this. They don't realize that it's a privilege. It's theirs. They're entitled to it. It's, you know, and so here on the chat, you can't steal my freedom, says you'd think a country would create jobs instead of keeping dependent on. Yeah, and that's where I'm going next on this comment. That's the other part of handing out free shit. The other part of it is the economic consequence. When you take money from people who earned it and people who produce something to get that money, people who produce something of value and got paid for it, and you give it to someone who didn't have to produce anything of value to get that money, that drives inflation. An example, if I build a house and I get paid $50,000 for the carpentry works, for the carpentry work in the house, I have $50,000. The person that I built the house for does not have that $50,000. So again, if I build a house and I get paid $50,000 for the carpentry work, I have the $50,000. The person who I built the house for doesn't have $50,000, but they have a house that's worth more than $50,000 to them. And how is it worth more? Well, it has to be worth more, because if the house to them wasn't more valuable than the $50,000, they'd keep the $50,000 and not pay me to build a house. They wanted the house built more than the $50,000, so the house was more valuable to them than the $50,000. To me, I wanted the $50,000 more than I wanted my free time, because I built the house for it. So now you have a house that exists. You literally created value. The same physical cash exists in the economy, because the person who wanted the house built had $50,000. They paid me $50,000, but I built the house for that $50,000. So now it's not just the $50,000 still exists, it's in someone else's hands, but a house exists, and that house has value. You created value. Same physical cash exists in the economy, but a house worth more, well, and again, not $50,000, a house worth more than $50,000 now exists. But when you give someone money for doing nothing, when the government just gives someone money and they didn't have to do anything for it, no value is created. Someone has $50,000 less because the government took it. And let's be real, it's more like the government takes $100,000 to dole out $50,000 because they spend all that money in bureaucracy and government employees don't come cheap. So it's actually more like the government takes $100,000 from me in taxes. Government employees and government bureaucracy gets $50,000 in pay, and they didn't create any value for that. What value is created merely by their labor cost of redistributing our money? But then someone at the end of the line gets $50,000 in entitlements, and I would say, what value did they create for that $50,000? Is there a house that exists? Nope. Is there products that they made that have value that they got that $50,000 for? Nope. Did someone's lawn get mowed, giving value to the person whose lawn got mowed? Nope. Same number of assets exist in the world. All that happened was you took money from a productive person and gave it to an unproductive person. That's how you would stifle an economy. Take money from productive people, give it to unproductive people? Duh. That's how you suffocate an economy. And it's even worse that our government is creating the money out of thin air. So the reality is that there's more money in the world because the government prints it. And again, if they don't physically print it, they come up with it on a computer at the Federal Reserve and start sending it out. But so the reality is there's more money out there in the world in the supply, and only the same number of assets, because you give someone $100,000, the Federal Reserve prints $100,000, even if they don't physically print it, they create $100,000 and start sending that out to people and say, hey, you have $50,000. That's more money out there, but there aren't any more assets were created. Nothing of value is created for that creation of money. Nothing of value is created when that money switched hands. You don't have a house that was built. You don't have more money, but the same number of assets equals inflation. Higher demand with the same supply means prices go up. There's more money out there chasing the same number of assets that exist. And that's how inflation happens. I mean, just the vicious cycle of what entitlements do, not just to, they destroy people's ability to support themselves, believe in themselves, be self-sufficient. Because that's the biggest thing, is people start to believe they can't. When you don't accomplish something, when you get something handed to you, we learn this with our kids. When your kids, they're dependent on their parents growing up, but if your kids, you don't start making them start, get a job, help around the house, they don't even believe they can do it. I've seen this with my daughter. I mean, and I make her do stuff, but when they were younger, she'd ask me to do something for her. And all of a sudden I say, her name's Kayla. I'd say, Kayla, she'd ask me something. I said, Kayla, go to Google. And because that was what I was going to do. Some of the things she asked me, if I didn't know, I was going to Google it and go to Google and type in. So I'm teaching her how to come up with her own answers. It's the same thing with being productive and earning money and all these other things. Kids don't just develop that skill by osmosis. They don't just develop that skill by habit. They just don't develop that skill by accident. You have to teach them and instill in them how to work and earn and make money. And once they realize, hey, I can earn money and I can support myself, that's an empowering thing. Versus someone who just gets money, they think that they need money to buy stuff from. You have to go get it from the government or wait for the government to give it to you. They don't even believe in themselves. They don't understand how they could go. You know, it's tragic. All right, so I got 4 minutes left in the show, and I had one more topic. I'll run through this quick. This is a quick one. I can hit this one. I saw this in the Business Journal. Kroger is the nation's, I believe, largest grocery retailer in the world. But the story was in the Business Journal that Kroger is closing more stores in Kroger is closing more stores in the West Coast, actually in LA, rather than pay hazard pay. And see, this is where liberal dreamland dwellers need to take note. This is where liberal fantasies run into reality. Los Angeles County mandated a $5 an hour premium for, quote, hazard pay for grocery store workers because of the pandemic. Again, this was LA County out in Los Angeles. Now, Kroger chose to close three of their stores out in LA County because it didn't make financial sense for them to pay all their workers $5 more an hour for premium for hazard pay. They would just as soon close the store instead of operate the store at a loss. And so this is where I say to voters and the socialism worshipers, there's a lesson here. Because you can wish for whatever you want, and liberal politicians can promise you the world, but they can't deliver. Reality is going to come bite you in the ass. All the employees at the grocery stores in LA, they were probably cheering their asses off when LA County passed the $5 an hour hazard pay, because these people all still went to work during the pandemic and exposed themselves. Although I could have got coronavirus. All the employees of the grocery stores in LA were probably cheering when the LA County Council started talking about this proposal to give a $5 an hour hazard, to mandate a $5 an hour hazard pay increase. All the grocery store employees in LA were probably cheering, probably super excited, probably thinking this is fantastic. I'm going to get $5 now. I'm due this. I've been working through this whole pandemic. I'm essential. But now those people that were probably cheering the LA County Council who mandated this $5 an hour hazard pay that private retailers had to pay, well, now they didn't get a $5 an hour increase in pay. They're getting a cut in pay because they're losing their job. And I don't mean to laugh at someone, but that's where these folks have to realize these liberal policies, they hurt the people on the bottom the most. My daughter was saying today, she's like, why is gas so expensive? I told her because of Obama. Not, I was going to say because of Biden, but yeah, it's from Obama because it's the Obama-Harris administration. But look, if she's like, you know, if I said, they're saying that under Biden, that by the end of his term in 5 years, gas, 5-10 years, gas could be $8 a gallon. And my daughter comments, she's like, that's my whole paycheck. And I'm like, yeah, that's the shit of this thing. I can afford it if my gas doubles in price. My yacht has a 300-gallon tank at $3 a gallon. That's $900 to fill up the tank. But at $8 a gallon, that's $2,400 to fill up the tank. I mean, I can afford it, but like people that can't afford their gas double cost, they're the ones that are going to get hurt. All right, that's it for the show. I'm going to lose my live audience here. Thank you much, guys, for tuning in. You guys have a great week. Carry on. Be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio. And I have to know, is that a gun in your pants or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.